The uniform is supposed to be the great equalizer. When I put on the serge, I am not a daughter of Surrey, or a woman defined by the silk of a saree at a weekend wedding. I am the shield, or that is what the recruiters told me when they saw a bilingual South Asian Canadian woman and saw a bridge to a community they didn't understand. They wanted my face for the brochures. They didn't want my voice for the reports. The air in the briefing room is thick with the smell of stale coffee and the industrial floor wax they use at the detachment. It is 6 o'clock hours. This is the moment where we are supposed to be a team. We are supposed to be a single organism moving out to protect the lower mainland. But as I sit at the edge of the laminate table, I feel the physical weight of the silence. It is a specific kind of silence. It is not the absence of sound. It is the deliberate redirection of it. When Sergeant Miller walks in, the room tightens. He is a man who carries 30 years of the RCMP on his shoulders like a heavy cloak. He is the old guard. He is the man I saw back a handcuffed suspect into a brick wall in an alleyway 3 weeks ago. He is the man I reported for unnecessary use of force and abuse of authority under the 2025 National Conduct Management System guidelines. Miller doesn't look at me. He doesn't have to. He just leans over the podium and starts reading the shift assignments. Parkinson and Roy, you're on Sector 1. Homicide follow-up on the 104. He goes through the list. Every name is paired. Every officer has a partner. Every shield has a backup. Then he gets to the end. Kaur, you're on administrative transport and solo perimeter for the community festival. We're short-staffed. The room remains still. I can feel the heat rising behind my ears. Solo perimeter. In a high traffic zone. It is a direct violation of safety protocols for an officer with my current threat assessment. But no one says a word. Roy, who I've known since the depot, looks at his boots. Parkinson, who I've shared 100 meals with, suddenly finds a hangnail fascinating. This is the blue wall. It isn't a physical barrier. It is a collective decision to let someone drown. I stand up. My duty belt creaks. The sound feels like a gunshot in the quiet room. Sergeant, the 2025 culture report explicitly states that solo deployments in high-density zones are a primary risk factor for targeted harassment incidents. I'm requesting a partner for the perimeter. Miller finally looks at me. His eyes are flat. They are the color of a winter sky over the prairies. The report is a recommendation, Carr, not a directive. If you're too afraid to stand on a sidewalk alone, maybe you should have stayed in the kitchen. A few of the younger guys snort. A muffled laugh escapes someone in the back. I don't flinch. I have been taught by my mother that grace is a weapon. I have been taught by the RCMP that documentation is a shield. I'll note the refusal of the safety request in my digital log, Sergeant, I say. My voice is steady. It is the only part of me that is. I walk out of the room before he can respond. I can feel their eyes on my back. It isn't just that I reported a superior. It's that I dared to believe the new rules applied to men like him. The 2025 report was supposed to be a turning point. It was supposed to address the internal culture that protected the bullies. But sitting in my cruiser 10 minutes later, I realize the report is just paper. The culture is blood and bone. I drive toward the festival site. The morning sun is hitting the mountains. It is a beautiful day in British Columbia. On the seat next to me, my radio crackles. Dispatch to 4 Alpha 12. Check your status. 4 Alpha 12. 10-4. En route to the festival perimeter. I wait for the usual banter. Usually someone would chime in with a joke about the food stalls or a complaint about the heat. Today, there is nothing, just the hiss of the open air. I am on the frequency, but I am not in the loop. I arrive at the park. The colors are already beginning to bleed into the landscape. The bright pinks and oranges of the Punjab. The deep blues of the police tape. My community is here. I see elders I recognize from the temple. I see kids running with plastic flags. This is why I joined. I wanted them to see a face that looked like theirs under the Stetson. I wanted them to know that the law wasn't an occupying force, but a part of them. But as I stand by the metal barricade, I feel like an imposter. I am wearing the uniform of an organization that currently hates me. An hour in, the accidents start. My radio goes dead. I check the battery. It's full. I check the channel. It's correct. I try to key the mic to report my position. Nothing. I look across the field to where Parkinson and Roy are stationed near the main stage. They are laughing. Parkinson has his radio in his hand. He's looking directly at me. They've cut me out of the digital talk group. This is the psychological warfare of the Force. They don't have to hit you. They just have to make sure that if you get hit, no one hears you scream. A group of young men in their early 20s starts hovering near my post. They are loud. They are looking for a reaction. In a normal situation, I would call for a second unit just to have presence. I would have a partner to watch my six while I engaged. "Hey, officer," one of them says. He leans against the barricade. "You look lonely. Where's your backup? Did they leave you out here because you're a girl? Or because you're a snitch?" My heart hammers against my ribs. Word travels fast in this city. The snitch label is a death sentence for a career. It means you chose the truth over the tribe. "Move along, please," I say. I keep my hands resting on my belt, away from my sidearm but ready. "Or what? You're going to call for help. We've been watching your radio. You haven't had a transmission in 20 minutes. You're on an island, Kaur. He knows my name. He knows I'm isolated." I look toward Parkinson. He's 300 yards away. He sees the group surrounding me. He sees the aggressive posture of the lead man. He turns his head. He starts talking to a vendor. The betrayal is a physical pain. It's a cold blade in the gut. These are the people I am supposed to trust with my life. I step forward into the lead man's space. I don't use my rank. I use my presence. "I don't need a radio to do my job," I say, my voice low and dangerous. "And I don't need backup to deal with you. You're obstructing a public walkway. Move, now." I see the flicker of doubt in his eyes. He expects a victim. He doesn't expect a wall. He mutters something under his breath and signals to his friends. They move off, laughing, but the point has been made. I am vulnerable, and my squad is the one who made me that way. The shift ends at 18 o'clock. I walk back to my cruiser, my legs feeling like lead. I drive back to the detachment in a trance. When I enter the locker room, the air changes. Two female officers are there. They are newer than me. They used to ask me for advice on how to handle the male-dominated environment. Now they won't even make eye contact. They are terrified. They see what happens to the woman who speaks up. They see the internal culture report playing out in real time. If they support me, they are next. I open my locker. My heart stops. My civilian clothes, the clothes I arrived in, have been taken out. My sari, the one I had draped carefully over a hanger for a dinner after my shift, is on the floor. It has been stepped on. There are black boot prints across the delicate fabric. The silk is torn. But it's the note pinned to the locker door that breaks the last of my composure. It isn't a long note. It's just a printed copy of the 2025 report's cover page. Across it, someone has written in thick black marker, "Reports don't have backup." I sink onto the bench. I hold the torn silk in my hands. This is the moral compromise. I did the right thing. I followed the new protocols. I believe the promises of a modernized RCMP, and the result is that I am more alone than I have ever been in my life. I hear boots on the floor. I look up. It's Miller. He's standing in the doorway of the locker room. He shouldn't even be in here. It's a female-only space. But the rules don't apply to the old guard. "Rough day, Carr?" he asks. His voice is conversational. It's the voice of a man who knows he's won. "You saw the radio silence," I say. I don't stand up. I don't give him the satisfaction. "You saw the harassment on the line. You orchestrated it." "I don't know what you're talking about," he says, stepping closer. "Must be technical issues. The equipment is old. Just like the culture." Some things just don't change because a bunch of bureaucrats in Ottawa wrote a book about it. He looks down at the ruined saree on the floor. Pretty colors, he says. Shame they don't hold up under pressure. Just like you. You should think about your future, saree. This is a small world. You put a stain on a senior officer's record, and suddenly everyone starts seeing the stains on yours. You think you're the shield. You're just the target. He turns and walks out. I sit there in the silence for a long time. The detachment is emptying out. The night shift is coming on. I hear them laughing in the hallway. The same easy brotherhood laughter that I used to be a part of. I realize then that the 2025 report wasn't a solution. It was a flashlight. All it did was show me exactly how deep the rot goes. It showed me that the shield I thought I was part of was actually a cage. I take out my phone. I look at the contact for the National Conduct Management Office. I have the digital logs. I have the photo of the locker. I have the names of the officers who ignored my distress on the perimeter. But I also know what will happen if I press send again. It won't result in a sudden wave of justice. It won't result in Miller being stripped of his rank. It will result in more technical issues. It will result in accidental delays when I call for Code 3 backup on a dark highway. It will result in me being pushed further and further into the corner until I have no choice but to quit. I look at the saree. My mother wore this for her own graduation. She told me it represented the strength of our history. She told me it was a garment that couldn't be broken, only unfolded. I fold the ruined silk carefully. I don't cry. The time for tears ended in that briefing room. I change into my civilian clothes. I leave the uniform on the hanger. I leave the Stetson on the shelf. As I walk out of the detachment, the commissionaire at the front desk doesn't look up. I walk past the posters of diversity and inclusion on the walls. I walk past the mission statement that talks about honor and integrity. I get into my car and drive. I don't go home. I drive toward the coast. The struggle isn't about the report anymore. It's about the soul. Do I stay and fight an institution that is designed to consume me? Do I keep wearing a shield that has a target painted on the back? The 2025 report said that meaningful change is only possible through transparency. They forgot to mention that transparency is a one-way mirror. I can see them perfectly. I see their fear, their cruelty, and their desperation to keep things the way they've always been. But all they see when they look at me is a problem to be solved. A culture fit issue. A woman who doesn't know her place. I stop the car at a lookout point overlooking the Pacific. The water is dark now. The mountains are just silhouettes against a purple sky. I realize that I cannot change the shield. I can only decide whether or not I want to be crushed by it. The silence isn't just in the detachment. It's in the system itself. It's the silence of the leaders who see the reports and do nothing. It's the silence of the partners who watch you drown because they're afraid of the water. I take my badge out of my pocket. It's heavy. It's cold. I think about the women who will come after me. The ones who will see the 2025 report and think the path is clear. I want to tell them the truth. I want to tell them that the saree is stronger than the shield. Because the saree is made of 1,000 threads woven together over generations. The shield is just a piece of metal. And metal, under enough pressure, always snaps. I don't throw the badge. That would be a movie ending. That would be a gesture of defeat. Instead, I put it in the glove box. I lock it. I am going to file the second report. Not because I think it will change Miller. Not because I think the RCMP will suddenly become the organization it pretends to be. I am going to file it because if I don't, the silence wins. And I have spent too many years learning how to speak to let them take my voice now. My career as I knew it is over. The consequence is irreversible. I will be moved to a desk. I will be blackballed from specialized units. I will be the difficult officer until the day I vest out. But as I look out at the dark water, I feel a strange, hollow relief. The blue wall is still there. It is tall and thick and decades old. But I am no longer trying to climb it. I am just going to stand in front of it and tell the truth until the bricks start to crack. Even if I am the only one who hears the sound, I start the car and drive back toward the city. The lights of Vancouver are a shimmering grid. Somewhere out there, the squad is still on patrol. They are still checking their radios. They are still protecting each other. And I am finally, for the first time since I put on the uniform, protecting myself.